podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Good evening and welcome to the Monday Night Euro Review Show with the Anglo-Italian Pod. As always, my name is Rory. I'm joined by my very good friend,
Adam. And we've
and
got
a
guest.
Special guest. Introduce yourself.
Hi, my name's Del. You probably heard me talking some rubbish about Manchester United before, but we're here to talk some more about Manchester United and some Serie A today, which I'm very excited for.
So nice. Thanks for having me on, guys. Nice. No, thanks for coming on. Recently we've kind of had a bit of a ban of talking about Manchester United because we just feel like we're repeating ourselves a lot. But tonight we are going to be talking about Manchester United. I apologise. Adam, how are you doing, man? Good weekend?
Yeah, not too bad. The little boy unfortunately had his unbeaten run of watching Wickham win games with a 4-2 defeat at home to Barnsley, but his excitement was there. It was infectious, so I'm blessed to have that little boy to my side. But more importantly, mate, how is Milan treating you as well?
Yeah, not bad. As we were saying pre-record, an unholy amount of football this weekend. Unfortunately, the Alex bloody threw away a 2-0 lead at home and lost 3-2 to Morecambe. Very disappointed in that, but Arsenal are making up for it at the moment as we speak. So I think I'll get over it. But Del, apart from Manchester United, how was your weekend?
Apart from Manchester United, it was really great. Spent some time with family, which was really nice. Had a weekend off work. Nice. You can't complain when we've got a weekend off, especially in what we do. So it was enjoyable until the second half kicked off the Manchester derby.
True.
My weekend was going great, and then it got ruined all in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, well, we're going to get onto that, I think. So this evening, we have a lot to get through. We've got the Manchester derby in the Premier League, of course. We'll be talking about Chelsea dropping points at Brentford. We'll be talking about all of the threes and, of course, some refereeing controversy because it's another weekend. Of course, there's more. In Serie A, we'll be talking about Napoli coming back with a massive statement win. We'll be talking about Lazio and Milan in a feisty affair on Friday night. The race for Europe heating up and, of course, the relegation battles as things look worse and worse for Sassuolo. But let's start in the Premier League and let's start with the Manchester derby. And Del, I'm going to kind of let you go off here, really. Pre-game, now we were all quite flippant and I was kind of being like, okay, Man City 5-0, conservative estimate. How were you feeling pre-game? And was it kind of what you expected, better than you expected?
You could look at my tweets. I was not expecting anything shy of us getting absolutely turned over, but then also coming away from the game and the way it ended and us going 1-0 ahead, I come away from it quite annoyed, and it wasn't for the reasons of any of the players.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So is it the approach that Ten Hag took and the, because I think, and again, we were saying pre-record, it amazes me that I think if that's Mourinho in charge and you put out that tactical plan and that performance, he gets absolutely hammered. I feel like Ten Hag didn't get hammered. Do you think he should be hammered more for his approach in this game?
Massively. I feel like I think we got very lucky with a goal. I'll be honest, I do think we got very lucky with a goal and we set up quite negatively. And then it wasn't just about the setup. It's about the decisions he makes and the substitutions that Erik ten Hag continues to make at clinical points in games. He'd done it in the Champions League. We got knocked out. We let lead after lead after lead go this season. Mm-hmm. And at the most clinical time in the Manchester derby, he takes off the most experienced player on the field in Johnny Evans. Mm-hmm. And we absolutely crumbled in defence. Don't even get me started on Sofyan Amrabat. I was so excited for him to come to Manchester United and bring a bit. It was almost like a second Casemiro from last season. And we've got this guy who can sit in front, at the back, marshal everything and kind of almost be our saving grace in the centre of the park. And he has been anything but that. I do think he played well against Forest as an inverted left back. But you look at the performances. I really hope we don't sign him on a permanent. But then also you have to look at Ten Hag and the decisions he made in that game, and they really did end up costing us. And we were very lucky for it to be 3-1, if I'm honest with you.
Well, it was just attack versus defence. And I think what amazed me, that United in the first half especially, it was like the goal came from a long ball and it was an incredible hit. But United were consistently getting through that Man City defence. And we've said on the show before, Adam, that the Man City defence is definitely get-attable, right? And United were able to get through. But it was just that lack of clinicalness from Rashford where he heads it onto his own foot almost. And then I felt there's another chance where Garnacho goes through. They just didn't, like, United just even then weren't able to get that out ball or get that final touch, right? The first half, it seemed like the plan was working.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think you alluded to the clinical aspect, which is definitely one of the attributes that you need if you're going to play a kind of expansive style of football on the counter-attack. Especially you need someone that's going to take their chances, but I think you also need those running wingers or players that are going to run with the ball to take off the pressure from that kind of midfield, be explosive when you need to. I think they struggled to manage that at times, and I felt like the performance of Rashford in particular, which was highlighted on numerous different occasions, but you know, he didn't really fight for the ball when it came to 50-50s, for example, like the Kyle Walker incident, for example. You needed him to really push and be a bit more direct. You know, even if he gives away like a free kick, I think Man United fans would forgive him for like being in that position where he's actually, you know, giving or leaving the pressure off that defence, in particular the midfield, because I've worked in the midfield where, you know, you're down to 10 men, for example, and you're having to absorb a lot of that. But you need people that are willing to run with the ball. And you had a lot of outlets for Man United's attack. And it was highlighted, you know, they were on there, there was opportunities where they could have released the right ball or, you know, been a bit more probably confident with the approach. So I feel like they weren't badly like taking the approach, but I think the thing was you kind of invited a lot of the pressure from Man City, and Man City were just patient. They knew all they had to do was stick to just doing the little pockets, dragging people out of position. And that's what happened eventually with Casemiro for especially the kind of second goal. I mean, you can forgive maybe Foden's first one, but the second one is basically tiredness. That's what kicks in that period. And as Del alluded to, it is that game management that Ten Hag is critical of. I think for Dell, I'd be confused which one is more indefensible, his kind of tactics or his post-match kind of summary, because I don't really know his thinking sometimes as well. When he comes out and, you know, he alludes to, you know, people not protecting his players, etc., it's just BS, isn't it? He's just not really seeing the room. And unfortunately, it does feel like he's a dead man walking at the moment, the way he keeps on kind of covering for the cracks that he is kind of showcasing. So, Rory, I think, you know, Man City were just clinical at the right moments, but they knew they had to probably be patient with the gameplay, and they took advantage, fully advantage. I think, obviously, Haaland's probably going to be highlighted for a few of the misses, you know, especially the one.
The one in the first half was my jaw genuinely dropped. I was like, no, that did not just happen. That
I looked incredible. The other way. I thought it was in. I looked the other way.
You expected it.
I thought me looking away is going to be. I think it's me looking the other way gave us a bit of a good luck charm. So I might just stop watching our games in the hope that's what's going to bless us moving forward.
But Del, so in the second half, it is kind of where it started to go wrong, right? Like, what would you have liked to have seen Manchester United do? How would you like to have seen their approach be different? Do you think there was anything they could have done to turn the tide a little bit? So I feel like they didn't even try. You know, in most games, there's like a to and fro, and a team will have a 5-minute spell where they have the ball and put a bit of pressure on. But United weren't even able to muster that. Like, how would you have liked them to approach that second half?
Something which I've seen spoken about from a Manchester City perspective, a Liverpool perspective, an Arsenal perspective, you could even go as far to say Tottenham and the other teams that are sort of battling for those top places in the Premier League, it's hunger. You speak about hunger and how much players want it. I could count on one hand the players that seemed like they were up for it yesterday, and it's always the same culprits. It's the people like your Scott McTominays and your Bruno Fernandes who just, if something goes wrong, they'll flare their arms up in the air, they'll get annoyed, but they just crack on with it. And I feel like that is the problem in which Manchester United are really showing recently, is that when half of your players seem like they're up for the game and half of the players don't, and they're almost fearful in a way, it backfires because you're almost stuck in this sort of this midway space where it's like, oh, are we pressing? Are we not pressing? Are we going on the counter? Are we not going on the counter? But again, though, those things come down to Erik ten Hag. And when you don't have a style of play and you don't have a system and it all just kind of seems thrown together game by game, if you're not drilling things over and over again, it's not going to become second nature to you. Mm-hmm. When you've got Bruno Fernandes playing on the I think Bruno Fernandes gets a lot of stick for Manchester United, but the thing that you can never doubt him for is his effort. And I almost love his emotion because that is what I want out of Manchester United players. I grew up on Roy Keane as mm-hmm. our captain. So anyone saying to me, you shouldn't shout at your players as your captain is that's bewildering to me. But again, it all comes down to Erik ten Hag. He's got the core of a great squad in there. And I feel like now we're really starting to see how much of a fluke winning a trophy last season was and how much finishing in the Champions League was just an absolute fluke for us. And there's so many things that needs to be sorted in that team. And I've said it before and I've said it again, I think we're into like the double numbers of players who could leave now. And Jim Ratcliffe's come in. He's going to be putting a lot of money and he's spoken about knocking Manchester City and knocking Liverpool off their pedestal. How is he going to do that with some of the players that were playing yesterday? Mm. I don't think Ten Hag, let alone the players, I don't think Erik ten Hag's going to be in next season. And I, for one, wouldn't be against it because you've seen the success of, I know Ben got annoyed when I was talking about on the narrative yesterday of how great Ange would be at Manchester United, but you've seen the success in not even a long period, over a short period of time in which getting the right manager into a club can have. And I honestly feel like now we're looking at a time where Manchester United are probably looking at the appointment of Erik ten Hag and thinking it wasn't the right one.
Mm-hmm. Is this just, it feels like rinse and repeat for United again, though. It just feels like, okay, so you go for someone else. Let's say you get Amorim from Sporting, or you get a project manager, exciting young coach, which is what Ten Hag was, right? And it was like philosophy football, and then he comes into that club and it doesn't work. Now, I feel like at Manchester United at the moment, and I was kind of semi trying to defend Sofyan Amrabat because I thought in the Serie A he was okay. I never really saw the massive fuss about him. I thought he was okay. But one of my mates messaged and was like, oh, I thought this guy was class in Serie A. And I was like, well, wait. Manchester United is a bit of a graveyard at the moment and has been for a few years. Like, I can't remember the last person that came into that club and then got better, right? So do you think that even with a new coach, it's still fundamental for so many other things in that club to change? Because I feel like you could bring in Pep, and he still wouldn't be able to achieve what he wanted to achieve because there's not the infrastructure around him.
I think you could look at infrastructure from a number of different ways. And something in which Pep does is it's from youth level to first team. Everyone trains next to each other. So you're seeing the step above. See, those are little things that you bring into the team. And that drives the hunger in the players. Whereas you look at Manchester United players, some of them don't even look annoyed to be on the bench.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, you can't sit there and say, for me, last season, I was like, okay, right, it's this pressing football, it's this, it's that. And towards the end of last season, it kind of felt like it was all thrown together. And then you saw pre-season, there were glimpses of good, but then Onana got lobbed from the halfway line against Len. And you then look at it and you say, right, some of these decisions in the transfer market have not been right from Erik ten Hag. Mm-hmm. I think getting someone in from a transfer side of things would be very great, but I don't want to be sitting here at the end of next season saying, well, we should have got rid of ten Hag in the summer. We've got Ashworth and we've got whoever we wanted in and we're having the same problems again. Because if he can't, I think just as much of the players essentially having their dress rehearsal for their new contracts, I think he is as well. If I'm Jim Ratcliffe, if I'm pumping that much money into a club, I'm not going to want to wait 12 months to get my project started. Mm-hmm. With all due respect to Erik ten Hag, as big as the project as he wants it to be, he has to prove that he can oversee that project. And if he can't prove that, why would we keep him on board?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't think absolutely spot on. I think I would be surprised if we see him in charge next season. We've been running a kind of running joke on the pod at the moment that I think Ten Hag is the most deluded manager in the Premier League. If
those press conferences, mate.
Only behind Nathan Jones is he the most deluded manager I've ever seen.
I think he beats Nathan Jones. Yeah. I honestly think with his comments on Anthony, I think he beats Nathan Jones. Mm-hmm. I think he is in a level of sheer delusion. Like, it is crazy. Mm-hmm. Anthony's unstoppable over the first 10 yards. Well, What about the next 20 or 30, mate? Like, I'm not worried about 10 yards.
He can have the first 10, I'll be honest. He can have them.
You saw against Manchester City. Great. He's great over the first 10. Then he cuts back in onto his left and everyone knows what he's doing. So it's great. Come out and I think it's great that he comes out and supports his players. But there's supporting your players and there's trying to pull the wool over people's eyes no one is going to sit there and go, actually, and then he has had a good season. Or like no one's sitting there and saying that. So it comes out, positives to take. What positives are there to take, mate? What, like, come on, you've just got beaten in the derby. Like, no United fans walking back going, actually, there were some good things from today. Like, wasn't happening.
No, you've just got to know the mood and be like, yeah, bad day at the office. We apologize to the fans, whatever it is. You know, these things happen. Just take it and leave. Yeah, I think it was really, I find his press conferences just very, very, very entertaining. But the Man City fans almost celebrating when Anthony came on. I was like, for Anthony, that must just be like, can you imagine being that guy? My God, just coming on and the home fans are like, yeah. I remember fans doing it with Pepe at Arsenal. And I was like, oh God, this guy just needs to go. Can we get him out?
Like, I used to be on Pepe's back as well, and I used to be the first person to be like, 72 million on Pepe, and look at how karma has come around now, and I am now stuck with a right wing Beyblade, mate.
Well, you know what, there is a bit of Pepe revisionism in the Arsenal fan base now. We're like, oh, you know what, he did get a few goals, it could have been Anthony. Yeah, but
Anthony doesn't do that. Oh, sorry, he did get one against Newport County, so it hasn't been a complete dud of a season for him.
That is very
That's
true.
What you bought him for, right?
Yeah. turning up at Newport County away.
And he dropped the celebration as well, right? He celebrated pretty hard for that goal as well, I think. I
wouldn't celebrate badly on those pitches. They're a bit lumpy, man. He's going to have a graze in his knees or something. Do you know what I mean? That just showed where Anthony's at, and more importantly, where Manchester United is at. Just on that celebration alone is Manchester United under Alex Ferguson, when they would be scoring against your Newport counties, it would be a small celebration, and it's the mindset of back to work. And I think that is the prime example of what you see from the best clubs. Is even when Manchester City went 1-0 down, their mindset didn't change. It was back to work. We're doing this. Mm-hmm. Arsenal, when they go down in games, when even towards the latter stages of last season, when things didn't go all to plan for Arsenal, they were still, even when, like, you saw in the games, the Southampton game is a prime example of not giving up. And I feel there's too many players in that Manchester United setup that just give up. Like, I think as soon as the equaliser went in, a lot of heads dropped. And it'd be sad to say, but it was a lot more of the actual senior heads in the squad. And it's when you've got young players like Kobbie Mainoo and Garnacho, who I don't think had the best game yesterday, but one of these are the guys to showing you what it means to put in the effort. That has to be embarrassing for some of those players. They're on 200, 250, 300 grand plus a week, and you're being shown by literal kids how to behave on a football pitch.
Yeah. Well, we've said a long time that changing room needs a hell of a lot of change before anything happens, anything starts happening at that club. And we do need to very quickly give Man City some actual credit. They did stick to their job. They are very, very impressive. At no point did I think they wouldn't win that game. Beyond Phil Foden's utterly crap celebration, I was really, really impressed by his performance. Is he going to get Player of the Year? I feel like he's going to steal it from Declan Rice, and I'm quite upset about it.
Yeah, I mean, he's just got the agility that he can adapt into different roles, can't he, across that midfield. And I think, obviously, Gareth Southgate must be purring at the prospect of him, like, potentially being adaptable to different circumstances across different kind of game phases as well. So I think that's really promising from an England perspective. But yeah, for what his levels he's kind of delivered, and there was a graphic that showed how he's kind of been integrated to that Man City squad and how he's every season got better and better. I mean, if you look at his goal contribution, it's increased all the time, even his assist, but his output is definitely something that the rest of the squad feeds into. They just love the way he drives with the ball. And you can see there's that maturity that I think he's gained from playing with the likes of De Bruyne, which is something that probably Man United would love to have, is that, you know, you've got your players like Garnacho that are feeding off those kind of more senior players, right? And I think that's what's missing right now. But if you look at Man City, the way they go about it is obviously that's that Pep philosophy. He demands more, and that's what he's getting out of Foden. We talked about Grealish and the fact that he's not kind of getting much love at the moment, but I think, you know, Pep just wants him to be following in what the footsteps of Foden. You know, he's a young kid that's come through the academy and he's displaying the kind of attributes that could be considered as best midfielder around Europe right now. So, you know, I'm not saying he is definitely the best midfielder in Europe, by the way, but, you know, the form that he's in, yeah, there's no kind of shouts about it. I think there is potential to say that he could be considered one of the best players this season. So, yeah, the
it's output an incredible is just incredible. Incredible season from him. Obviously, the first goal was just unbelievable. The second goal, Manchester United continue to not be able to track runners into a box. It just blows my mind. All you have to do is run into the box and they completely melt. And then, of course, Haaland gets his goal to finish with Amrabat looking like he's ready to go back to Florence, I think. Although all the Fiorentina fans are like, are you sure you don't want to buy him? Because we'll sell him. Because Arthur has come in and done a hell of a job in his replacement. So it looks like you might, Amrabat might be without a home come the end of the season. But Del, we're going to leave you there. We're going to let you move on. You can pretend it never happened, right?
Cheers.
And we can move on with the rest of the weekend. Let's go down to the City ground as Darwin Núñez. I was so excited. I was sat on my sofa and I was like, right, don't jinx it. Don't jinx it, but there's like 30 seconds left. All you've got to do, Forrest, is clear your lines. All you've got to do, get that ball, pump it into the stand, everyone's happy. For some reason, I think it's Mario, decides to try and dribble it out of the box, and McAllister puts in one of the best crosses I've seen this season for Núñez to dink it in. Incredible header. Before we get onto the refereeing controversy, that is the kind of spirit that Liverpool are showing at the minute, right, Del? And this is kind of scary that they continue to do this. They're not going to stop.
Mate, for me, I've been so impressed with Liverpool, and a lot of my friends are Liverpool fans, so they'll be jumping up with excitement to hearing me say that. But we look at Liverpool in the cup final. We look at them against Nottingham Forest. We look at Manchester City yesterday. It's about that belief and that hunger. And a lot of people used to talk about Fergie time, but it's not just Fergie time anymore. You've got Klopp time now and Pep time. And at the end of the day, you look at the players in which were involved in that goal. Darwin Núñez, someone who come under extreme scrutiny at Liverpool time and time again. Time and time again, people have got on his back. He's not good enough. He doesn't do enough, this and that. He's now really started to show people with his goal contributions that he is a man that can essentially honour the number 9 shirt at Liverpool. And Alexis McAllister, someone which, obviously a World Cup winner, did unbelievable at the World Cup, and then comes back and joins this Liverpool team. And I'll be honest, at the start, I wasn't really sold on it. And I think it just took him a bit of time to really understand his role and what the team really needed from him. But you look at it now, and he is just, again, another type of player that you look at and you say, why wasn't Manchester United going for him? Or why was no other clubs going in for him? Because it didn't really seem like Liverpool had much of a battle to get him in. No. But I feel like he's going to be instrumental to their success going forward. And you've seen it with Manchester United make a lot of mistakes in the transfer market. And I think you've seen with Liverpool, they have got the right balance of bringing in from their youth setup into the first team. They've mixed that with buying the right players at the right time for the right price. And it's not just over the past couple of seasons. You saw it with Mane and Salah and numerous players which Klopp has decided to sign, who a lot of people have probably raised eyebrows or kind of turned their nose up. And they're now looking like really, really shrewd signings. And I think McAllister is going to go down as one of those as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. It's funny because obviously Caicedo was getting all the headlines in that Brighton midfield. And then you look now and you go, oh no, the real guy was McAllister. He was there all along. It was him. Incredible ball from him. Núñez, incredible header. Liverpool were obviously knocking on the door most of the game. I feel like Forrest did have a few chances. Again, we were talking pre-record about Anthony Elanga not quite having the finishing touch. A few chances for Awoniyi. I feel like Forrest probably deserves something from the game. Now, Adam, we need to talk about Mark Clattenburg and Nottingham Forest. Martin Clattenburg absolutely stealing a living again. I'm not sure what his job is totally, but he is now issuing or deciding whether they're going to issue a complaint to Pugmol. Do you think this error is worth the screaming that there's been online? Because I'm still kind of torn between whether to be angry or not. I can't quite decide.
Yeah. It does feel like genuinely it could have been human error in this incident. Mm-hmm. Like, but the problem is, I suppose we just don't hear that communication for Paul or whoever it be. So the more it kind of carries on, the more it feels like he genuinely didn't know what he was doing on that very moment. And it's a bit sad, isn't it, that this could be one of those deciding factors for, could be, you know, Nottingham Forest staying up in the league, but also Liverpool potentially winning the league as well. So it's one of those that, you know, when you kind of sit back and reflect, obviously Liverpool had that kind of decision against them at Spurs match earlier on in the season. Now, a lot of the Liverpool fans were kind of alluding to, you know, we lost on that decision, but we gained on this one. So it kind of equals itself out. And we kind of joked about it pre-VAR times, you know, how referees would win and decide games and, you know, it cost teams points. But yeah, the more this kind of carries on, and you saw even tonight, it's been announced that Paul Tierney is not going to be the referee for the next weekend's game. So that obviously puts a lot more kind of decision making to kind of say, yeah, he obviously either cocks up or they've decided to give him a break. But the fact that they haven't communicated it, I don't think really helps the whole kind of equation, whether it was a legitimate decision that he made or he just forgot about it. So I do feel sorry for him because we all make errors. Like, we all have lapses of concentration, but the fact that it wasn't communicated, I feel just, yeah, intensifies that kind of rumour mill, doesn't it really, Rory?
Yeah, well, I think he made the same mistake earlier in the game, but in favour of Forest. So he gave the possession back to Forest when he should have given it to Liverpool. So clearly it was like a blind spot in his knowledge or in his like awareness at the time of the rules. The problem for me with this, and I'm going to go to you, Del, see if you agree, is the fact that Forest still had 1 minute and 50 seconds to react to that, right? They still had plenty of chance. And yes, the dynamic of the game completely changes, right? Let's say Forest get a corner or Forest score a goal or, you know, the world ends. Like, a million different things could happen, right? But Forest still had a minute and 50 to react to that and not concede a goal, right? So Liverpool fans are perfectly in their right to turn around and go, no, sod off. This is not, there's nothing wrong with this, right?
I agree. And I think it's one of those things where you could talk about it from a butterfly effect, and that's the way in which I've heard so many people refer to it. It's the sort of butterfly effect of what that decision did to the game, because I think it riled a lot of the Forest players up. I feel like most people could see that Liverpool should not have been given possession back. It should have been a drop ball back to Forest. Do I think Forest were going to score on the next attack? Probably not, but in the same sense, I think it's one of those decisions where if it goes against your club, you're there, bright-faced, you're angry. And if it's one of them that goes in your favour, you're kind of brushing yourself off a bit. You're like, well, we got away with one there. But I think it's very difficult because I do actually think it was human error. I don't think he sat there and gone, oh, give Liverpool back the ball. This could make the title race extremely exciting, because a draw would have probably made the title race a lot more exciting anyway.
So this will throw a spanner in the works. Let's see what happens.
Boys, look what I'm about to do. Boys, check this out. But I honestly think a lot of these decisions, I think, like Adam, you said it as well, it's just like they go against you sometimes and they go in your favor sometimes. We cannot sit here and say that it was the worst decision from a referee this season, because there's been some absolutely woeful ones. And I've spoken numerous times about my opinions on VAR and the way in which it's sort of, it's implemented in this league is absolute joke. You would literally, the Women's World Cup and the African Cup of Nations and all of these other tournaments are showing us how to do it. And we go, how about we don't change anything and we continue to do it the way we do? Like, if something, like, I get it. If it's not broken, it doesn't need fixing. But this is very much broken, very much needs fixing. And we're putting like paper tape over the top of the cracks to kind of show. And every week is another decision. And every week, we don't hear the communication. And I think that's the biggest issue that I have is I want to know what they're saying.
Yeah.
You go to any other league, you go, like, rugby do it perfectly, where the entire stadium, you can hear what the referee is saying. The transparency between the referee, the player, and the fans, it would bring so much more calm. Do I think Nottingham Forest then turn around and Like, do I think that changes the game if that decision doesn't happen? Let's be real. Liverpool were knocking on the door just as much as Forest were. So it was an end-to-end game towards the end at some parts. And we spoke about Langer, but I think Liverpool still win that game. You can't blame a decision 2 minutes prior and say, well, actually, we were going to go down the other end and score. And it's like, but you didn't. You now need to defend. And your failures wasn't in your attack. It was in your defence.
Well, personally, I'm looking forward to Klopp offering to replay the game, right? Because that's what's going to happen next. But let's
you'll
move.
You'll send a box of chocolates or something.
Sorry, kiss, and then that's it. But yeah, a huge win for Liverpool. Forest slowly getting dragged back in. Now, obviously, my favourite thing at the end was Stephen Reid. That guy, legend, played for Ireland a lot, got sent off at the end confronting the referee. Apparently, he said to the ref, can those points come off our points deduction that's come in for the FFP? And apparently, that's why he got booked, which I absolutely fucking love if that's true. That is incredible.
Okay, so Reid needs to be knighted, I'm guessing, right?
Yes.
Absolutely unbelievable. And of course, the owner comes down and gets down the tunnel and follows the referee for some calm words, I'm sure. So absolute scenes at the end of that game. But Forrest genuinely worried about what's going to happen with this points deduction. I think the relegation isn't going to be settled by the end of the season. I think there's going to be court cases going into the summer before we know who's in the Premier League next year. But not good for Forrest, great for Liverpool. Let's move on from that game. And I want to talk about Aston Villa and Ollie Watkins. He's now the most productive striker in terms of goals and assists. Absolutely killing it. Why am I still afraid he's not going to be in the England squad in the summer? Adam, I'm going to go to you. I feel like Gareth still isn't going to take him. Ollie Watkins is unbelievable this season. Emery has really got the best out of him, eh?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I feel like he's increased his game in terms of input and output. He's, you know, more mature. He's a bit more calmer when it comes to those kind of one-on-one decisions as well. So he's becoming a lot more complete under Emery. Emery's given him some confidence. It helps that he's got players like Leon Bailey on form as well. That sets him up as well. But yeah, it does feel like inevitably, as this conversation carries on, that he feels like he's going to be missing out on the Euros, which is just bizarre because you think about the potential lineup that you have beyond sort of Harry Kane, let's just argue, then I don't see how you could put Ivan Toney and Callum Wilson ahead of him. Mm-hmm. I don't get that kind of why he persists with potentially Callum Wilson, given his injury record as well, especially because I just feel like if you're going to take players to the Euros, you need someone that is on form, that knows the setup, which Ollie Watkins does, and it just feels like he doesn't feel like he can step up to that level. So it is a bit bizarre, but given his input and outputs this season, I think he's perfectly obliging for that role. So I don't get it, Rory. It's just really bizarre if Southgate does leave him at home.
Yeah, I feel like he's just going to take Ivan Toney and that'll be it. I'm just really kind of, it's occupying quite a large part of my thinking at the moment, because every time I watch Watkins, he just gets more all-round incredible. His ability to win the ball, his build-up play, aerially, he's looking pretty dangerous. Like, I feel like Emery's just brought so much more out of him. Like, Del, I don't know about you, I thought he was a fairly one-dimensional striker before, like, runs through, like on the last shoulder, one-on-one finish, a bit of a lack of composure. What do you think it is that Emery's changed about him that's got so much out of him? Because it's just been, the turnaround's incredible.
I think by the system in which Emery plays, it does, this is not me saying that Ollie Watkins does not deserve to be on the plane, because I think Ollie Watkins should actually be one of the first names there. Mm-hmm. If someone has got output to that level, they need to be on the plane, because sometimes England need goals late in games and Ollie Watkins is the perfect type of player. The system is set up to suit Ollie Watkins, but the thing to remember is it's not just about Ollie Watkins. And you spoke about Leon Bailey there, and he was someone who a lot of people kind of start to raise their eyebrows at. He come in on an IV, and a lot of people were almost confused as to where will he be able to get it done. This season, I don't know what he's been putting in the pasta at Aston Villa, but everyone seems to have just upped their output. And I think that we spoke about it earlier in terms of hunger. every single Villa player buys into the philosophy. They buy into the system. They understand that you've got to get the ball to Ollie. They've got to get the ball wide. And even players like Ramsey, everyone on that pitch, Douglas Luiz, I think, how many goals and assists has he had this season as well?
It's incredible.
And you're now looking at a lot of these Villa players who are, most people are probably written off to play at the top level in the Premier League. You look at, I would say, Douglas Luiz is a prime example. He looks at, he was at Manchester City, didn't really get a shot. And a lot of people kind of, not shocked, but I was one of the people that I think he could potentially get it done at City. But now he's shown that he can really get it done at the top level in the Premier League.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I have just noticed that Rui is off, so I'm going to try and blag ourselves through this, Del. What did you make of Luton's performance? Because we've been saying on the pod for a while that we've been so impressed by the endeavour and just the way they've gone about their business. And they were so close in this very moment where they were obviously brought themselves back into the match. And you kind of felt like there was a third goal coming. Did you feel like, and this is something that was brought up earlier today, actually, that against the top sides, they seem to struggle immensely, that they kind of lapse of concentration. And I think that is just the kind of difference to a more established team, you know, like an Aston Villa, where they can kind of see out a game potentially, whereas Luton are still adapting. And, you know, what I think is a worry for Luton Town fans is that when they've had games that they should have beaten, like the likes of Burnley and Sheffield United, they've lost at home as well. So do you feel that it's just that lack of experience at the back that's costing them at the moment?
I do, and I feel like a lot of the Luton players don't get enough credit. Like, Tahith Chong is someone who has obviously come from Manchester United, and he came on when we managed that miraculous comeback against PSG. So he'll always hold a place in my heart. And I think he's someone who's shown that he dropped down to the Championship and kind of got his head down, had a really bad injury whilst he was at Birmingham, and now he's managed to kind of turn it around and slowly start to prove himself in the Premier League. I think there's a lot of players at Luton who a lot of people kind of raise their eyebrows at when Luton signed. But I think a lot of those players are now the ones who are really starting to turn things on for them. I'm going to put my neck on the line here. I think Luton stay up. I don't think they get relegated. Yeah. Regardless of the points deduction, I feel like in terms of, they're really starting to hit form at the right time, to be honest with you. They had their they had a really tough start. And I feel like now they're really starting to hit form. And I feel like that these next few run of games, I feel like it's going to end up saving them, and which I'm very excited for, because I feel like with a year under your belt in the Premier League, there's always that second season syndrome. We've spoken about it before, but I think Luton do stay up, and I feel like they could potentially establish themselves as a Premier League club, because it seems like they've got the right philosophy and they're making some shrewd signings, and that's the thing that really helps you crack on in the Premier League.
100%. And we've got Rory back with us. So Rory, we were just talking about
the Arsenal score, didn't he?
That's what it was, right?
Sorry, guys. No, StreamYard just kicked me out. Anyway, talking about Luton, their upcoming fixtures are getting a little bit easier, touch wood. They've got Palace away, then they've got Bournemouth away, but then they've got Forest at home. So they've got a few games there where they could pick up some points. Then they've lost most games by one goal, so they're like super close all the time. Yeah. And like, and I'm sure you mentioned it, I missed it, but the fight they show in games is just always so impressive. Like, Adam, this is the fight the Sheffield United and Burnley need to display at Manchester United at some point, right?
I was waiting for that.
I couldn't resist.
Very true. We just mentioned about that kind of, I suppose, the lack of experience at the back that is just in those moments at the moment. We talked about the fact that against the bigger sides, that's where they seem to crumble. You know, they got themselves back into the match. I think Tahith Chong, who did superbly, I have to say, during this particular match, he just comes off with that little niggle of an injury. And I think if he stays on the pitch, I think that changes the complexity of the game. I think they go on and actually maybe get a late winner as well themselves, because, you know, they had some willing runners in Ogbeni as well. And I think it was Ogbeni who realises he let Digne go, which is just that little moment that I think Luton are just lacking in terms of experience. But look, that's just something that they'll allude to. They'll learn from this experience. And I'm confident, you know, the way that Rob Edwards has gone about it with every game, like every mistake that they've made so far, they've just grown. They've grown. If you compare it to when they took on Brighton on the first day of season, everyone was shitting themselves. I think everyone thought the very worst for Luton. But actually, every time they've just adapted, they've taken it on. And you know what? I'm like Dell. I think they will stay up. You know, I always thought Kenilworth Road is that kind of fortress they need to lean on. And at the moment, I think they just need to carry on in the same vein. But it is just that moment of just making sure that they concentrate for the full 90 and see it out. I think that's what it is at the moment, Rory.
Well, we shall see. We're fully behind Luton. We've been loving their season, and especially Ogbeni. Love that guy. Elsewhere in the Premier League, super quickly, because I'm very aware of time, boos for everybody as both Chelsea and Brentford fans boo their team off the field. Thomas Frank with a what the fuck in the press conference when he was complaining about why the fans were booing him. Big fan of that. Elsewhere, West Ham beating Everton 3-1. Suchek, your favourite goals of the weekend, guys, because my favourite goal, Dell, I'm sorry, my favourite goal was Suchek, but there was a lot of good goals this weekend.
In terms of favourite goal, are we doing the weekend or the week? If we're going for the week, I'm going to go Luton's last week against Manchester City, even though it was a 4-4, but from the weekend alone, you're going to make me say it, aren't you? I'd actually go down with Nunez. It's very close between Foden and Nunez, but for me, I think just the emotion of the goal, you saw what it meant to Nunez. If you can't appreciate what that meant for him and for the club, and you sort of it was sort of the solidarity that the entire team showed. Yeah. I think for those reasons, for me, it has to be the Nunez goal. He just absolutely lost his mind when the ball went in. And it was a lot of limbs, and I can 100% get behind that, man.
Yeah. He almost went Ketspire on the hoardings as well. He was like absolutely booting the crap out of it. But the other great goal, sorry, was Chelsea-Brentford, the Wisser overhead kick. Adam, did you see that?
Yes. That was incredible. That was incredible. Yeah, I was going to say, I was just thinking of the Serie A goals. There were some beauties there as well. Andrea Carboni for Monza, that was one. Tunemi for Salernitana against Udinese was a banger in itself. But yeah, I mean, it's a very hard one. I think it's down to your aesthetics and what your kind of pleasing eye, or on the eye, should I say, be. Foden kind of strikes out for me. I just think that curve for me and just that run as well for it. But I think they're all very good goals.
There were some really good goals this weekend. Elsewhere, Muniz scored again for Fulham as they beat Brighton 3-0. We had Newcastle win 3-0 at home against Wolves. Tottenham coming from one goal behind. Beautiful free kick from Eze to win 3-1. And Burnley lost to Bournemouth 2-0. The defending for that Clivert goal was absolutely comical. I cannot believe Kompany is not under more heat than he is at the moment. Burnley are atrocious. And Arsenal are currently winning 5-0. Beautiful. We are going to leave the Premier League there, I think, and we're going to head over to Serie A. Andiamo, here we go. And we're going to start with Sunday night. It was an absolute belter of a game. I feel like sometimes these big games, you get so excited and they don't live up to expectation. From the first minute, this game was just blow for blow, end to end, two teams who absolutely needed to win. Napoli needed to keep their European race alive, with Bologna winning just before them, with Roma winning, with Lazio losing, all the teams around, they knew they had to take advantage. And Juve, just any chance of keeping in this title race, they knew they needed to win. And it just set the game up perfectly. But Adam, from the first moment, this game was unbelievable. But how didn't Juve score in the first half?
Just because I think Vlahovic is joking on the big games at the moment. He just doesn't seem to be as clean. And this is the problem. I say not as clinical. He hit the post. You know, he was very unlucky with some of the opportunities. Mm-hmm. I think he should do better with the opportunity that Chiesa crosses it into the box and he headers it against the other kind of side of the post. Mm-hmm. I think he should get that on target, for example. But this is the problem with Vlahovic, is that he seems to lack that kind of almost confidence that he's going to kill off these teams, you know, and take the chances. I feel that it's just, I don't know if it's lack of composure at those moments, but because there's that little move that he kind of dinks past Meret and it's post. And that was just so unlucky, because if that's on the other side by a few inches, that goes in off the post. But then again, you know, outside of Vlahovic, I think they really did struggle to create anything of really kind of open opportunities. And it wasn't until the 8th minute when Chiesa takes a shot from distance, right? Mm-hmm. If that doesn't go in, then again, you're kind of thinking, right, where are Juventus going to get this goal from? And they already had lined up Milik to come on, mm-hmm. which we joked about in our own private chat, that it is timed ironically for the 85th minute for his substitution. Yeah. But I think Allegri, this is another example of a bit like a Ten Hag situation where he plays to a kind of style of football, right? And I thought Juventus were very unlucky overall not to get at least a point out of this match, mm-hmm. given the circumstances. They played better than they did last year, where they lost 5-1 to Spalletti's Napoli at the time. They kind of gave a lot of effort, but without that kind of cutting edge at times, Rory. And that's the thing. And I think they got bullied as well. It has to be said. I think Napoli did a great job on them.
Yeah, I think. Well, yeah, I'm not sure, because I think the first half, Juve, they created so many chances. And if Illing Jr. takes a better first touch on a few occasions, I think he gets a goal. There's one that goes just over the crossbar, which I think was quite unlucky. I feel like Napoli really, there was a 20-minute period where they just could not cope with Juve. But they were able to turn the tide and get themselves back into the game. I just feel like at some point, I know we love to hammer Allegri, but at some point the players have to take responsibility here and be like, I think that was one of the most exciting and productive performances I've seen from Juve this year, in terms of like, because they had no choice, they actually went for it and they actually kind of exploited some of this attacking talent. Chiesa, one of the best performances I've seen from him for a very long time. I thought Locatelli was decent in midfield. I thought like the wing, like Cambiasso, was quite lively. I think there was a lot of players where I was like, okay, this is exciting. It's attacking, it's forward thinking, but they just could not get that finishing touch. Like, Del, what have you thought? What did you think about Juve's performance in general? And have you been impressed by their season? Because I don't know if people expected them to be second and really push for the title.
I'll be honest with Juve, I didn't expect them to be there. I think after if anything, I would probably have expected Napoli and Juve to have probably swapped positions, because I don't think, obviously losing Kim and Jay was I would actually say the biggest loss to Napoli. And I feel like that is really shown this season.
1,000%.
If you are going to sign a modern day centre back, but someone who keeps the sort of the classic fundamentals, he is the perfect mix of both. And I feel like, with the way Juve have set up, I feel like there's just a few positions where they lack an experience. We've spoken about it earlier, and again, that hunger. And I feel like with Illing Jr., I think he's one of those players where I think he's going to be great, but it's just, it is those big games. And Adam said it about choking in big games. And I don't just think it's Vlahovic. I think it's a lot of those players. I don't think they necessarily believe in themselves in the bigger games. Mm-hmm. It almost comes across as a bit, they're shocked at how well they're doing in a way, and it kind of the concentration levels start to split. But for me, I think Napoli, I would, every time they lose a game, I'm like, right, their season's done, that's it, it's game over, they're not making Europe. And then the next week,
get another manager,
you know what I mean? And it's just like Napoli are one of those teams that they're just so surprising. And we spoke obviously off the pod, and I worked across Syria for a couple of years, and I think it's one of the most exciting leagues in the world. But when you have got Juve and Napoli going ham, literally end to end at times, I absolutely loved it. But if I was a fan of either team, I would have literally have been watching that game with almost covering my eyes, because you look at it and it's like, this is, all right, how do we not want to defend like this? And how do we want to attack? And you look at some of those attacking positions that Juve are in, they are probably you have to come away from that game kicking themselves. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like there was enough chances in there for them to really grab something from the game.
Yeah, they were just so profligate in front of goal. It was incredible. I think just on another day, they win that game. But we have to give Napoli some credit. We have to say that was an incredible, like, to have the bottle after they concede the equaliser. I thought, okay, now this is a test for Napoli, right? Mm. Now we're going to see
what happens here, because as we've kind of been through, they've not had a great season. But I think across the performance, Calzona, obviously we've talked about him, worked under Spalletti, worked under Sarri, knows that system, has gone back to the 4-3-3, knows what's going on. This is the closest we've seen to a Spalletti, or the closest we saw to last season's Napoli, I think, in the quick 1-2s, the speed of the play, Cavana being able to take a man on and showing a bit of confidence, and Guisa making runs into the box as well as dominating in midfield. Like, we just saw Lobotka as well. There was like Zielinski for a little bit, right? Who looked like half decent. Like, and we started to see a bit more of Napoli from last year. And I think it honestly took Juve by surprise. I think they were like, oh crap, this is kind of, they're getting flashbacks to last year. But it's great to see that Calzona has kind of implemented some of that. Adam, I wanted to go to you. It's just lovely to see Cavara back and back in confidence and with a great finish, like an unbelievable finish, and him looking like he's enjoying his football again. I feel like he's not enjoyed any of the last three managers, is it now? I can't keep up.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, the philosophies that they had, those previous coaches versus Calzona, is probably a breath of fresh air for Kvaratskhelia, because he has got a bit more freedom in terms of the way he was kind of running about. But the kind of thing that I would say and allude to is Kvaratskhelia was doing a lot of the tracking back as well, you know, so it wasn't like undermining those kind of duties as well during this match. But yeah, he just looks like a man that was on a mission. He knew what he had to do. Obviously, helped by the fact that I think we know about Osimhen's qualities as well up top, but I genuinely feel he bullied Bremer, for example. Bremer, he was always on his back. And that kind of aspect of that pressure, alongside Traore, who didn't have as good a match, right, for example, but he was kind of maintaining that pressure. And that kind of alleviates that kind of space for Kvaratskhelia to feed into. And I've always felt like this with Kvaratskhelia, that he would be great in the middle of that kind of, or behind the front striker. I think he's just someone that can go either side of that main striker and cause even more havoc for those defenders, because he creates a little bit more of a headache. Whereas when he's stuck on that wing, there is that sense of predictability about what he can do, right? He's either going to run directly at you or he's going to try and drag it back at times. Mm-hmm. So I feel that that could be something that they deploy later on. But Calzona has definitely instilled a bit more confidence. If you look at the progress since he took over, and we saw it against Calgary, for example, they're starting to get back to their kind of playing ways and they've started to get that confidence and it's breeding into the squad. So it's going to be interesting to see how De Laurentiis reacts. I mean, you could see he was very happy in the stands. He was jumping up and down, Rory. I mean, this is going to be an interesting
That's
kind of
just relief.
Now.
That is just sheer relief. He's like, oh, fuck. Right, I think I might have got it right. Finally, I think I might have got it right. I can leave this stadium with, like, my body intact. Like, I feel like that was definitely relief. But for Napoli as well, just so many, we have to say as well, Raspadori getting an opportunity. So I feel like, he got a little bit lost. He's a player that scored huge goals consistently for Napoli last year, like so many big goals in the Champions League and in the Scudetto race. And for him to, I think I said it on Twitter, but Osimhen owes him a few drinks, because he absolutely saved Osimhen with an awful penalty there. He did his best to miss it, but he hit the crossbar. It went in. And Del, we're big fans of Raspadori on this pod. We've loved him since his Sassuolo days. He's a super exciting player when he comes on, right?
He's one of those players last season who I was looking at and I thought a lot of clubs would be in for him in the summer. Mm. He was scoring clinical goals. He was getting himself into positions and not always against the easiest of opposition as well. It is never, as much as you can kind of, some teams might kind of get a bad name in the Champions League, kind of just being there for the group stages. But a lot of people need to realise that the Champions League is probably the most tough club competition out there. Mm-hmm. And for him to score the goals he did in the Champions League and to score the goals he did on their way to the Scudetto last season, I feel like he's a player who, coming into this season, I was quite shocked that he stayed at Napoli, because he was never really the starting guy there. But then also, it was like, if you're scoring goals to the level he was last year, I personally thought a few clubs would be in for him. Coming off the back of that, you kind of saw it in the earlier stages of the season. He wasn't really getting a chance. And when he did, his head was down. And the weekend just shows what confidence can do for a lot of players. Osimhen being one of them. Obviously, he has saved Osimhen. But Osimhen's the type of player, and Clara as well. And seeing Raspadori's three players at Napoli, who I have honestly last season was If I was a the Manchester United board, I'd go, let me sign a new front three. I would sign those three in the sense of, but Kvara for me, just on that, I think he would be the most unbelievable inside forward, and that sort of Rashford role that he plays for Manchester United, not on the, out on the wing, but kind of coming across to support. And Adam, I think that was a great point, but you look at these players that Napoli have got in there and they are so exciting. And Raspadori is very much at the top of that list. If he gets a good season under his belt, he could get a very, very big move in the next few years.
Yeah, he's a really exciting player. Always just runs forever, and his finishing, like, just a lethal finisher. Absolutely love the guy. And for Italy, he's had some big moments for Italy as well when he's played. Yeah. And I think he's just all around a good lad. So I'm delighted to see him doing well. But for Napoli, they're still in the European race, right? They're still in the European race. They're clinging on. They're desperate to not have the worst title defense in history. But I was looking at their matches coming up. So they currently, they have Torino at home next. Then, of course, the game against Barcelona. Then Inter at home and Atalanta away. So a bit of some big games there. Like Torino playing very well this season. Always always capable of the spring and a surprise. But yeah. Adam, I'm sticking with my Napoli knockout Barcelona shout. Do you think this performance has changed your mind? Do you think they can do it? Am I overreacting?
No. Look, I was of the opinion on that, based on that first leg, I felt that Barcelona looked the more likely to progress, right? And it shows you a difference of a couple of weeks, few games under Calzone. Don't forget, he must have had one training session prior to that Barcelona game. So now he's instilled that kind of style and philosophy again. Yeah, it definitely changes my kind of perception given the way Barcelona are going about it at the moment in league. So, you know, I think this game is going to be a bonkers match. I think there's going to be lots of goals in it potentially, and it could be a game that goes into extra time personally.
Yeah. I cannot wait. Dale, where are you standing on Barcelona-Napoli?
If you asked me 3 weeks ago, I literally would have said Barcelona will wipe the floor of Napoli. But it just shows you what a system can do for a team. He's obviously someone, like we said, worked under Spalletti, and when you kind of install that belief back into players, and it's not just in belief in themselves but belief in their teammates, because let's be honest, when teams are losing, they look around for each other to blame. They're not always going to be like, I'm the problem. And you've seen that numerous times with a lot of top clubs when they're out of form. The biggest problem is no one is taking accountability, but you've seen now what having a system can do for Napoli. They've got belief back in that team. They've got their young guns firing again. Barcelona not having the greatest time at the moment as well. But then also, it's almost like I've seen reports that Xavi is now being asked by Laporta to stay because he's kind of seen the managerial merry-go-round that we've got ahead of us. And it's almost like a really bad episode of Spanish EastEnders at Barcelona. Like, Laporta is just, for me, is like, I obviously don't want to say the name of the guy who founded WWE and used to be the owner, but he reminds me of that type of sort of chairman, which is just like, oh, this doesn't make any sense at all. Okay, let me fire my shot and we're at least going to try it anyway. It's like, this new thing of announcing that a manager's going to leave at the end of the season is absolutely bewildering to me, and I feel like if Barcelona do get knocked out, they'll be looking back on that announcement and the decision that was made to announce that so early in an integral part of their season as well. Like, they haven't really tied up Champions League football in La Liga, they haven't really tied up going through in Europe. So what are they essentially? They're announcing it to say, if there's any good managers that are out there that kind of fancy managing
us, we're hiring.
They send your CV. What is that about, man? Like, come on. And I feel like, I do feel like Napoli are going to go through, and it's going to be those decisions to make the announcements in the way that they did that's going to come back to haunt Barcelona.
Well, Forza Napoli, we hope. Speriamo, we hope that Napoli can get through. God, I would love that. We're going to leave Napoli Juve there. Oh, last thing, Reganovaro very, very nearly scored at the end. Very nearly scored. He could have got the job done, but, you know, it is ultimately Regani. We can't ask too much. Let's go to one of the other big hitters in this weekend. Atalanta 1, Bologna 2, and who else? But Captain Fantastic, Lewis Ferguson, getting the goal to seal the win. unbelievable scenes up in Bergamo. It looked like Atalanta completely lost control of this game. And the second that Bologna got that goal, it was kind of game over. Now, we have to say, like, Bologna went on that 10-match winning run when the game towards the beginning of the season, right? They hit that rocky period. And the job that Motta has done to just turn that around, and they're now on a six-game winning run. It's just incredible what he's doing at that club, Adam, right?
Yeah, 100%. And he's the most exciting coach, you know, outside of the top four kind of coaches that are around in each of the leagues at the moment. And he's definitely one that I definitely think has got a bright future, right? And he's talked about how he still wants to see out this projects at Bologna. And we're all hoping, you know, that Bologna do manage to get that fourth place spot, because that would be beautiful for them to be able to keep those players, right? Maybe reinvest a little bit of that money. And you never know. Like, I don't think anyone expects them to do well in the Champions League in next year's format. And that's going to be a headache for all of us, I'm sure. And we saw that earlier. But just the way that, you know, Joshua Zirkzee, you know, he's announced himself on the stage. He's taken a bit of time to adapt, but he's actually become a bit more prominent this season. You know, we talked about Lewis Ferguson multiple times this season, but, you know, Ossolini, for example, he's got to be in it with a shout for the Azzurri squad, for example. And then you've got players like Stefan Posch at the back as well, you know, Sam Bekma as well. So they've got so many quality players. But the way they took it to Atalanta as well, it has to be commended, because, you know, Atalanta, they're going through what I would say is definitely a very tough fixture schedule at the moment. You know, they're playing some of the big sides, and they came off the back of a 4-0 defeat against Inter midweek. They come into this obviously needing to get at least a point, I would say, just to keep their hopes of being in the top four mix. And you know what? I think they'll be disappointed, because Carnesecchi on multiple occasions almost saves them from, you know, losing this game. Again, such an impressive performance. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just a disappointment in the likes of Kopminers, who gave away that needless penalty, for example. And there were so many kind of off performances from Atalanta. So I feel like Atalanta have come to that point, you know, where they're just getting a bit more tired. It's not helped by this fixture list at the moment. And, you know, yeah, it's going to be a huge task for Gasperini to kind of turn it around. But huge credit for Motta. I really love Motta. And I hope the rumours are supposedly that Juventus are sniffing around now, looking for their replacement of Allegri. I hope it doesn't happen, Rory. There is some talk about it already.
I'm going to go Rio Ferdinand. Give him the contract, right? Whatever number, just make him sign it, because we need... If he gets them into the Champions League, you've got to do 1 year in the Champions League. You can't get him there and then just sod off. Like, you have to see the job through. Like, Del, we're heavily invested. I love Bologna anyway. I've loved this team for a very long time. We're heavily invested in Thiago Motta. Like, it's incredible the season they're having. Like, I predicted at the beginning of this year that they'd get Europe. I didn't think it would be Champions League.
I think Motta is probably one of the most underrated coaches in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen numerous pieces of literature, videos, kind of exploring his tactical analysis and how much he goes into the finer details of coaching. But I think that really shows with Bologna, and that is how you win those games in the dying seconds in with those finer margins. And I think that is really starting to show. Look at Josh Upfer. He's someone who, was it Anderlecht he was at as well? Yeah. And he was playing on the company, and you saw the sort of the dressing room about his attitude. And he's someone who's kind of been tainted and painted with his brush of him having a bad attitude. I don't really see a player with bad attitude. I see someone now who has really got his head down and really started to grab games by the scruff of the neck as well. And I feel like that's something that only comes with maturity and getting games under your belt at the top level. Ferguson as well. Like, they've made so many shrewd signings, and if they keep Thiago Motta, they keep the sort of backbone of that team. Yes, I think it would be amazing for them to make Champions League football, but I feel like they could really establish themselves in those European spaces for a few years to come if they keep the right players on board.
Yeah,
it keeps Thiago Motta, just a smart bit of investing, which they have done in recent times as well. And I think Arnautovic was probably someone who a lot of people looked at that was at Bologna, and a lot of people thought, when he goes, they're going to struggle, man.
Yeah.
All right, he's winning Scudetto. Like, he's probably going to win Scudetto, and a lot of people could take that out to. But for Bologna to be in the position they are after losing their said star man, I think he's done an absolutely brilliant job there. And I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if Juve come in for him. But I'm with you guys. Like, finish the story, get him to the Champions League, see what he can do. Because if you give a young manager that sort of freedom to play his style of football, look at the way Bologna are playing. That,
yeah.
I hate to go back to Manchester United, but we speak about philosophy and hunger. But those are things in which Bologna are showing and Manchester United are failing to do so.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm Team Motter all the way. Team Motter all the way.
Yeah, absolutely loving him. And like you said, the recruitment there is fantastic. They've got the old head, they've got the old sporting director from Atalanta, and this is why they're kind of finding these. So like we've talked about him a lot, but Bukema came in at centre-back and has just looked instantly at home in the league, not barely put a foot wrong.
Yeah.
Sailor-makers, like Milan fans were running him out of the club. And last night he made the biggest difference when he came onto the pitch. It caused all sorts of problems. And you're just seeing them kind of resurrecting careers and picking these little like gems. You're like, there's a lot to love there. And I think they could be the whole thing set up for Motta for a while. I personally want him to go to Inter once Inzaghi moves on, whenever that is. I think the story written is that he returns to Inter and, like, you know, treble winner with under Mourinho and takes over at San Siro. I think that's kind of where the story should go. I think Juve are trying to get there first, obviously. But I'm hoping he sticks around with Bologna. But Adam, for Atalanta, this run of rough games is causing them problems. Now, we thought that they might... they might struggle, but they might pick up more points than they have. So obviously they drew with Milan, which isn't a bad result.
No.
Hammered by Inter, again, not a bad result. But then losing at home to Bologna, this was going to be a tricky game, but this is really one on this run that they should have been picking up points. Like, they've got Sporting next, then Juventus away, Sporting again, Fiorentina at home, Napoli away. Like, none of this is easy. This is a game they needed to get points in, right?
I always felt personally that this was a run that wasn't going to be kind on them personally. You know, I think we were, you know, even potentially saying Sassuolo a few weeks ago wasn't going to be a straightforward one, but because of Sassuolo's form, that made it easy for them, unfortunately. But, you know, you look at the rest of those fixtures, I didn't personally feel that this was going to be straightforward for the Gasperini. And if you add into that Sporting fixture, yeah, it just seems to get tougher and tougher. So they do need to ride out this period, unfortunately. They got, look, that draw a few weeks ago against Milan. Obviously, very scrappy point, I would say. You know, they weren't anywhere near their best. And I think, you know, that De Ketelaere kind of form has kind of dropped off suddenly. I mean, yes, he was unlucky against that goal against Inter a few weeks ago, or should I say in midweek, but... this just seems to be one of those things with Gasperini. He needs to pick up from this. He needs to kind of give them the confidence to kind of rejuvenate that side. And I think they just take it game by game at the moment. But yeah, it's not too easy. And I think it might be just something that they might lose momentum. Because if you look at the likes of Roma, for example, the form that they've picked up under De Rossi, you know, that's another worry for Atalanta as well, because they don't have to worry too much about the European competition as much, shall we say. Mm-hmm. There's no expectations on De Rossi necessarily to do much in that competition, but certainly for De Rossi to qualify for the spots is the huge thing. And then, you know, you've got Lazio as well mixed into that with Fiorentina, who seems to be always in and out of those kind of prospects. So, yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for Atalanta.
It is, yeah, a bad run at a bad time. But you've mentioned them there, so we're going to go across to Roma and De Rossi. And life is fun again for the Giallorossi. What an incredible... the only game they've lost is to Inter, which is completely understandable. They've gone to Monza. Again, a difficult... we have to say, every time you mention Monza, you have to say a difficult place to go to. And they've scored 4 goals. Pellegrini absolutely flying at the moment, just loving his football. Goals from a beautiful free kick from Dybala, Lukaku getting in on the action, and then a very angry and almost violent Paredes penalty. Where he absolutely rocketed into the ceiling. Adele, I don't know if any of us expected much from De Rossi, but he's really impressed me. Just the attacking football, the excitement he's got back at Roma. It's incredible to watch, right?
I don't want to compare it to Solskjaer coming back to Manchester United, because that ended up really badly. But it is that same sort of thing where he was someone who's very loved by the club, and he's come back. And let's be honest, his managerial CV wasn't the greatest before he came back to Roma. And that's not a secret. But to come into a club who've just been managed by, less like Jose Mourinho will go down as one of the greatest coaches ever, and to come off the back of Jose Mourinho and to change things around that quickly, you have to take your hat off to him. He's getting form out of Dybala, who is, for me, I still don't understand how more clubs didn't, like, it absolutely bewilders me. Like, how was there no one else going in for Dybala? Like, he was linked with Spurs for years. I wouldn't have been surprised if he ended up there. But I think just those players that he's managed to get form out, we spoke about a lot of these players kind of being resurrected at Bologna. But I think this and that Roma are going through the exact same thing at the moment. A lot of people had written Lukaku off, said that he was done. A lot of people had said Dybala was too injury prone. A lot of these Roma players, that Pellegrini, oh my God. Like, he's someone who
so good to
has
watch.
Been, I, do you know what I mean? And he makes it look so simple. And I don't think there's many players in that position who make it look as simple as he does. He is a leader in that team as well. And that's something in which you cannot buy in today's market. Is a lot of clubs, when they're going into the market for a central midfielder, they're looking for flair and they're looking for someone who can score but can defend. And can... Pellegrini is giving you all of that. I think he's an unbelievably underrated player, in my opinion. I, honestly, watching him and the performances he puts in for Roma, unbelievable. I feel like he's someone who, if Roma end up finishing in the higher European places this season, a lot of people are going to be speaking about Dybala and Lukaku and their goals and how they've sort of got them there. But I honestly think that without Pellegrini in that team, I don't think they would have had... it's not me saying they wouldn't have had as good as a run, but I don't think their run would have looked as great or as been as comfortable if Pellegrini wasn't in that side.
Yeah, well, it's been such a key thing. And one of the things that made or helped Roma fall apart was the fact that Mourinho wasn't getting the best out of him. Mourinho was falling out with him. He was in and out of the team. Like, I think De Rossi would say himself, it was so, so key for him to be able to get Pellegrini back, and then everything else can go from there. And I think it's just fantastic, fantastic to see. I've always been a bit of a Roma fan, and I just really, really like seeing them do well. So yeah, fantastic for them. Dybala scoring again, Lukaku scoring again, and all on top of this, Abraham is pretty close to coming back. It looks like he could be back just before the end of the season. Adam, chucking in Tammy Abraham on top of this, this could be a frightening attack heading into the business end of the season.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, like Del alluded to, Dybala in particular, his kind of freedom and in terms of just the kind of composure he brings when he is fit is just out of this world. And that's why he's considered one of the world-class strikers out there. You know, everyone kind of wondered why Juventus were allowing him to go on the free. And there was those rumours that they were kind of trying to entice him back to the club on the free transfer in this kind of window. But yeah, I mean, when he's there and he's available, he's just clinical. And that's something that Mourinho alluded to, that he relied on him. You know, he wanted him to play a lot more often. But yeah, Tammy Abraham's an interesting one, because obviously that confidence has certainly been knocked out of him at the moment. And yeah, I think he's overthinking sometimes. You know, he's had those situations where he just can't get a goal at the moment, you know, hitting the bar, hitting the crossbar. But on his day, he can be a very interesting striker. He can be someone that contributes a lot. And it's not just through goals. It's just the hard work that he offers as well. He chases down as well. So he's just been very unlucky. And obviously injuries have counted against him. But yeah, if he can get him back to those levels, then yeah, I think De Rossi's got an interesting squad going into the end of this season, you know. And I think I was looking at their fixture list. They've got kind of a favourable run, you know, although they've had a kind of favourable kind of first few fixtures. I mean, bar Inter, which everyone, you can say, they're just an off anomaly in terms of like teams to face, right? The rest of the kind of fixture list looks kind of kind on Roma. So this is going to be interesting, you know. I think it's what, 13, 12, 11 games left of the season. They can definitely put a lot of pressure on those teams above them. And, you know, I think on the head-to-heads, I'd fancy Roma at the moment.
Yeah, it's incredible to see. And the last thing on this I want to talk about is De Rossi's not afraid to make the big calls as well. Like, he's dropped Rui Patricio, bought in Miles Vila. He's looked
a lot more assured than Patricio ever looked. And it just shows that he's come in. Well, he was never going to be afraid of anything, was he, De Rossi? But he's come in and he's not been afraid of, like, just, no, you're dropped. This is my guy. And I have to just give some flowers to Cristante as well, because I feel like he always gets ignored. And some of the passes he was pulling off this game, just line-breaking passes. Oh, man, on your day, you're such a great player to watch. He gets so much stick, and I don't see it myself. I really like him. Yeah, there's a lot of great players from him as well. For Monza, just a terrible day all round, really. Juric continues to look for his first goal for the club. He came close a few times. But the Carboni goal was a very, very nice goal. It was a very good goal. So the Monza fans did have something to celebrate, kind of. And let's finish our Serie A roundup with the first game of the weekend, Lazio. If you're going to throw away a European race and your season, do it like Lazio. It is just incredible. They never do anything by half. Was it Guendouzi was sent off for grabbing someone around the throat?
Yeah.
Pellegrini was sent off for Lazio, and there was someone else sent off at the end, wasn't
Marisic.
There as well.
Marisic.
That's it, Marisic as well. But Milan get the win. Del, a huge win for Milan. Before we talk about Lazio, huge win for Milan. We kind of thought they'd get the job done because Lazio are always prone to this. But what are your thoughts on Milan this season and this performance? It's just important to get the points at this point, right?
Said the words right out of my mouth, mate. I think it's very important at this stage of the season to get points on the board. You're going to be looking around at everyone else around them and thinking, is it going to be a Champions League space? Is it going to be Europa League? Is it going to be Conference League? Or is it going to be no Europe whatsoever? And I feel like it is that tight. It's in Serie A that a lot of these teams, it isn't you're going into games to get a draw. You have to be going in to get all 3 points. And the way in which Lazio just completely self-destructed was absolutely mind-boggling to me. They completely lost their minds, to be honest with you. And I feel like the only thing that kind of saved Milan from getting involved is they've got the mix. They've got a few young guys in their team, but they've also got a lot of experienced heads on the pitch and also in the dressing room. And I feel like that is really starting to come into play for Milan. When you have experienced heads there, they know how to grind results, even when they're not playing well. They know how to kind of grab games by the scruff of the neck. And I feel that's what they've really started to do. Unfortunately for Lazio, they could not get the job done. I actually went into the game thinking it was going to be a draw. I thought they were both going to go full head of steam, and I feel like everyone's going to forget about defending. But as soon as that first red happened, I think the tide of the game and the mood in the stadium felt like it changed, because it was almost like, great, we've actually going to have a war on our hands here.
And then
it just turned into another one. And it was just, it was hard to watch. If I was a Lazio fan, I would have found it hard to watch, because it was almost like watching your team essentially throw away an important game at an integral part of the season. But for Milan, is they can walk away from that game with their heads held high. They got 3 points. I thought Leao, by the way,
unbelievable
player. I think he's, as much as I think he gets a lot of praise, I don't think he gets as much credit for what he can do on the pitch. I think if you put him in one of the top clubs in the world, I think he could still be performing at that level. And he's someone who I've been excited to watch year on year. I think after going from Lille to AC Milan, it's not always the easiest of moves, and kind of you're in a team where you've got players like Zlatan who are going to be the star, and it wouldn't have been the easiest of starts for him at AC, but he really seems like now he is the lead man there. And when they really needed to depend on him, he turned up. And I think I would like, he's the sort of player which I would love to see in the Premier League, but also he's doing such great things in Serie A. Why should he leave?
Well, this is it. I think, look, it's taken him, let's be honest, it's taken him a long time to wake up this season. Like, he has been dead a lot of this season.
He's been on Do Not Disturb.
Yeah, it feels like that first goal or the first goal in a while last week has kind of woken him up. But Adam, there's a lot of anger in Italy at the moment about the refereeing performance from Lazio. Do you think they have any issue? There's a lot. Now, obviously, Italians love a conspiracy theory, especially when it comes to football. Do you think there are any grounds for complaint here? The referee had a difficult night.
Yeah, he had a very difficult night when you look in the grand scheme of the incidents that happened as well, because prior to all of those kind of sending offs, you had also Castellanos, who kind of seemingly gets swiped out by Mike Maignan as well for one of those kind of incidences. But yeah, when you look at the replay, Castellanos definitely looks like he's looking for that kind of foul in that respect. But yeah, when I heard Letito has lined up his lawyers to kind of see if the match can be replayed, I was just like,
absolutely love it.
Welcome back, Serie A. This is the Serie A we all love. These conspiracy theories from these chairmen. Love it. Love it. But yeah, I mean, I would be more worried about the Torino-Fiorentina referee than I was on this one, because that incident, in particular with Ricky, who got sent off for just
that
saying,
was insane.
You know, that was absolutely incredible. He got bought by the kind of pressure from the fans and as well as the players on the pitch, but yeah, he completely lost it. His emotions got on top of him, and it seemed to be a weekend of referees making these odd decisions. Obviously we saw in Spain with Jude Bellingham as well, right? This was the weekend, right? Referees just lost it. There was just that one button. They were like, yep, do what you want, basically.
Chaos. That's what happened. Woo! Let's go. Yeah.
Welcome back.
I absolutely loved Bellingham just going full Brummy as well. Like, that's a fucking goal. Just screaming at him. Like, I did absolutely love that. But yeah, the Richie one, all he said was like, que falo es? Like, what foul is that? Bang, you're off. Go. Yeah. Like, incredible decision. But yeah, you've got to love Letito. Every time he's in front of a microphone, you're like, okay, everybody quiet. He's about to say something stupid. And he always does. So it's incredible to see. But Serie A elsewhere, just very quickly. Oh, we still need to do the bloody relegation battle. Guys, very, very quickly, Verona beat Sassuolo 1-0. Adam Swiderski getting the massive goal. Bit of a deflection, but huge goal for him. Massive moment. Verona,
yes.
I think they could stay up. I think they're going to do it.
Yeah, they're going to prove me wrong, aren't they? They're going to stay up. But yeah, it's just incredible when you consider the context of they sold half their team in January and bought in a combination of players they hadn't even like scouted. You know, full credit to Marco Baroni, but this game could have gone either way. So Swallow had the chances, you know, Forsveld in particular, as well as Berardi. Berardi gets obviously injured in the 60th minute, and that kind of gives the initiative to Hellas. So through Swiderski, obviously he's a substitute, comes on, and I'm delighted for the guy. I mean, I definitely kind of tipped him to be kind of one to look out for, because he's come from Charlotte FC. Definitely one of those strikers that I think will do it in Europe, whether that be at Hellas Verona or elsewhere. So, yeah, full of credit. And then, Rory, you have to talk about Empoli losing their game against Calgary. Calgary, a massive win for Claudio Ranieri, because that means they're on level on points with Hellas Verona, but goal difference is keeping them in the relegation shouts. However, looking at the kind of fixture list, it's not too kind on Empoli going forward. They've got a few of the big guns that they have to play. They were obviously about, I think it's currently as it stands, about 5 points clear of the drop as it currently stands. However, they could be dragged into it in a couple of weeks if they don't get some important wins or victories. So this relegation battle is going to go to the last day of the season. I can see it, and it won't be with one club. Obviously, Salernitana definitely gone, but Udinese, they couldn't get a win, could they? They have to draw.
They have to draw every single week. Honestly, their fans are going to just have waking up in cold sweats at the ideas of 1 point. They just cannot get that final goal. Elsewhere, Frosinone and Lecce drew 1-1 as well. Massive point for both those teams just to keep themselves alive. And my boy, Walid Khedira, gets another goal. Two games in a row. You've got to keep it up. I went in hard on this guy being good in Serie A, and he's been absolute toilet. But finally, he's starting to get a few goals. But looking at the table, which teams do you fear for, and which teams do you think are going to get their way out of it?
I'm going to put my neck out a lot. The thing with me, Sassuolo, who've been a team who I looked at for years in Serie A, I was very excited by that. I've been a very big fan of Berardi from over the years, and I feel like a lot of great players have come through that Sassuolo setup. I do think they are going to be safe, but I don't think Ranieri is going to be able to pull the magic off.
Yeah. I fear for Cagliari. Yeah.
You know what it is? It's one of those things where I feel like Ranieri, I feel like after the Leicester stuff, like he is in that sort of GOAT level, because no one ever expected them to do that. But I feel like if he manages to keep them from relegation, it will be bigger to the fan gallery than it has been for the Leicester fans. Because I do think they're a club who do deserve to stay up in a way. But then I feel like there's so many. I actually said to one of my pals the other day, I think Empoli are going to be the club to go down, just because of the run of games that they've got. I feel like 5 points, I think it was you said, I don't think it's going to be enough. The thing is, a lot of teams around them have slowly started to hit form. If Udinese can get a win, I think they'll manage to drag themselves out of there. But that, they'll probably end up drawing every game between now and end of the season. So that'll probably also keep them up as well.
Just every weekend, we're like, weekend preview, Udinese, draw, next. it's just insane.
I hate to an Udinese fan, to be honest. But like you said, it's just...
Yeah.
If I was an Udinese fan, I reckon there could be 1 second on the clock, the ref is putting the whistle to his mouth, and I reckon I still wouldn't believe that we're going to get 3 points. But that is why I love the Serie A. Mm-hmm. We're blessed with this league where, even in the relegation battle, there's six or seven teams in it. In the European places, there's six or seven teams in it. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it's going to be Inter's year. But after Inter, it's almost like going to be a free-for-all at the top and the bottom. And I think towards the end of the season, it's going to really start to become very exciting if a lot of these clubs can't pick up points. Because Adam, you said it. We could be in a position where we've got three or four teams battling out for relegation on the final day.
Yeah. The final day this season is going to be, there's going to be so many tables coming up on the screen and live positions. I can't wait.
I used to work in the graphics team doing that. It's an absolute nightmare. Don't wish that on anybody.
I can't even imagine. My math is
scenario A, scenario B, basically.
You're basically waiting on the data from Opta. If Opta you're manually having to work everything out off
that. And given it's probably really slow as well, right?
I've been there before where it's like, oh, we need a table of 30 seconds. And I'm like, I'm just going to have to manually do this table if that's all right.
I'm trying to figure out.
Now we know. Why the Serie A account is so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't do it anymore. It's a couple of years ago, so you can blame my old colleagues for that.
that's it.
Beautiful. Well, guys, I think that is everything for Serie A. I think we've done all of the games, really. I think you've had enough. That's it. We're done. Del, thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure. We'd be more than happy to have you back on at some point. For our viewers and listeners, when they want to find you, where can they find you online and keep up with your stuff?
So I'd be at Del Tefic, which is my name. So I do a lot of football content, wrestling content, if you're wrestling fans. I'm starting to do some more analysis stuff as well, which is going to be coming out very soon too. So make sure you keep an eye on my socials to keep up with everything.
Beautiful. Good man. Adam, anything to say before I let these people enjoy their evenings? I'm going to watch the post-match of Arsenal 6-0.
Yeah, I bet. Keep the love on TikTok. That's all I can say. Make sure you download it, follow us, and then delete the app. Fantastic. Keep it up.
Perfect. Guys, you can find the subscribe button down there. You can find us on Twitter at Italian Anglo Pod, on Instagram at Anglo Italian Pod, and on said TikTok at Anglo Italian Pod. As always, thank you for joining us. We will be back on Friday with our weekend preview and recapping the midweek action. I think there's midweek action. There always is. So, guys, we will see you on the other side. Ciao. A dopo.
Ciao.
Podcast Network.